هنا صوت الجمهورية الجزائرية.
قسما بالنافلات الماحقات والدماء الزاكيات الطاهرات. قسما.
Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk about books, ideas, and the formation and circulation of knowledge. I'm your host, Thomas Hill. Today we will be airing an interview with the renowned Franco-Algerian journalist, historian, political activist, and intellectual Henri Alleg. The interview was conducted last Tuesday here in our studios at WVKR by Patricia Solerier of the Department of French and Francophone Studies here at Vassar. Mr. Alleg was in Poughkeepsie last week in a visit to promote a new English translation of his book published by Nebraska University Press, La Question, or The Question. A philosophical account of his experience of imprisonment and torture by the French government during the Algerian War of Independence, La Question had an immediate and explosive effect on French attitudes about that war and the lies that were employed by the state to perpetuate it, and is a testament to the power a book can have in shattering this kind of national self-delusion that governments perpetuate to justify or cover up state-sponsored violence and crimes against humanity. The book was written while Alleg was in prison in 1957. It was published with a preface by Jean-Paul Sartre, and as soon as it hit the streets in France, it was banned and seized by the French government, the first such banning in France of a political work since the 18th century. This didn't, of course, stop copies of the book from circulating, and in fact, it was a clandestine bestseller in France almost as soon as it was published. The moral here for regimes in power that would employ censorship to conceal their actions and delimit dissent is that censorship is a two-edged sword, and as La Question makes very clear, so is state-sanctioned torture, which demeans and destroys those who employ it, even as it ennobles and strengthens those it is used against. If any book has relevance to the political and social health of the United States today, this book does. As our government leads us down the same vicious, self-destructive path that the French people were on when La Question was first published, employing, in fact, methods of torture first used by the French military in Algeria. And Alleg points this out in the concluding paragraphs to his appended afterward to this new edition of the book, which I will read from here. But there is yet another explanation, even more contemporary, for the renewal of interest in issues raised by the question. This explanation moves beyond the boundaries of France. We know that French specialists in quote-unquote muscular interrogation or extreme questioning, the habitual euphemisms for torture, were able to pursue new careers well beyond the borders of Algeria as soon as the conflict ended there in 1962. With the authorization of their superiors in the cabinet ministries and the military general staff, General Osiris and his fellow officers responded positively to the solicitations of Latin American dictators. These rulers, many of them former military men, had need of the particular talents of their French colleagues to enable them to suppress their populations, which were becoming more and more resistant to their tyrannical rule. During the years of apartheid, the rulers of South Africa also called upon these professionals for their help and advice. In various countries, including the United States, numerous intelligence officers thus received training in the tasks they would be asked to perform. They were initiated into the methods of the quote-unquote French school, with their instructors being former torturers during the Algerian War. This instructional model, which we have recently seen in operation in Iraq and the Abu Ghraib prison and elsewhere, and at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, is still widely emulated. We have every reason to believe that it will continue to be practiced well into the future. For a long time, it has been characteristic of governing elites to devote themselves to the interests of the powerful rather than the welfare of the masses. Fraudulently, they continue to invoke the barbarian menace of terrorism. They respond to the grave problems that assail our world, social injustice, frustration, misery, inequality, sickness, and hunger, by a refusal to listen, to understand. Instead, they give us war, violence, and torture. And this is why it is always useful for those who retain a belief in peace and a hope for a better future not to forget the lessons of the past, even when they are painful to contemplate. So with that, here is Patricia Solarier interviewing Henri Allègue at Vassar College on April 17th, 2007. And just to add, this is a wide-ranging interview that covers matters having to do with the Algerian War of Independence, the publication and reception of La Question, torture, censorship, the Cuban Revolution, journalism, Allègue's political views, and the current political situation in France and the European Union.
During the Algerian War of Independence in 1954-1962, Henri Allègue was the editor-in-chief of the pro-independence newspaper Alger Républicain, which was banned by the French colonial government in 1955 for its communist sympathies and anti-colonialist stance. After Allègue was arrested in 1957, he began writing his seminal anti-colonialist work La Question, a first-hand account of the torture he experienced in Algerian prisons. The book was smuggled out of prison and printed in France, where La Question, with a preface by Jean-Paul Sartre, sold more than 60,000 copies in 2 weeks. Shortly after its success, however, the French government promptly banned the book, its first ban since the 18th century. After escaping from prison, Monsieur Allègue returned to France, went back to Algeria in 1962, and helped rebuild Alger Républicain. He is the author and co-author of 13 books, including Prisonnier de guerre, 1961, Victorieuse Cuba, De la guérilla au socialisme, 1963, the 3 volumes of La guerre d'Algérie, co-written with his wife and 4 other writers in 1981, La Grande Aventure d'Alger Républicain, co-authored with Boualem Ralfa and Abdelhamid Benzine in 1987, L'URSS et les Juifs, 1989, Requiem pour l'Oncle Sam, 1991, and 40 ans après la guerre d'Algérie, Retour sur la question, in 2001, an interview with Gilles Martin. Nebraska University Press just released last year La Question in English under the title The Question. I am going now to start with my first question, Monsieur Allègue. Édouard Glissant was at Vassar 2 weeks ago and told me that the publication of La Question in 1958 brought the issue of the systematic torture of pro-liberation Algerians and their sympathizers to the fore of French and world opinion. But that, for you, it resulted in being ostracized for a very long time by the French political and cultural establishment. Could you comment on this, please?
Well, I would say that it is true that after the publication of The Question, for a very long time, I was never heard at the radio, never questioned in television. But in the same time, there was a very important publicity around The Question itself, because it answered questions that the French public was interested in having answers. So it is true if you consider that the establishment were the people who, the few people, but in official positions that could invite or not people to mass media. But on another hand, it helped the fight for the truth on the Algerian War to come to the public and have real answers and not only official answers, which were far from the truth.
Okay. What was your relationship with Jean-Paul Sartre? How did he come to write the preface of The Question?
Well, I must say that at the time when Jean-Paul Sartre wrote this preface, I was in prison and I didn't know him. So it was his own initiative. And in fact, it wasn't scheduled to be the preface to The Question. It was an article that he had written for the weekly L'Express, and the number was seized, and it was forbidden for reading to all Frenchmen at that time. So the idea came to a Swiss editor in Lausanne to put it as a preface of The Question. Right. And that's how it came. So I didn't play any part in this, and I discovered what he had written a long time after, It was seized also after L'Express, the book was seized, and so people could not have an approach to his writings without an effort to find the book, sometimes illegally. So I knew what he had written only after being released from prison. It is years after that.
What role do you think the PCA, the Algerian Communist Party, could have played in an independent Algeria had it not accepted to become part of the FLN, the National Liberation Front, and then been suppressed?
In a way, things were more complicated than that. First of all, the Front of Liberation was defined in the idea, not only of the communists, but of many other people, as a front, which is not a party. A front is the coalition of many people who have a main objective but do not agree on all positions. So in the beginning, that's how the communists and other people considered the front. We agree on the fight for independence. We agree on the necessity of complete liberation, economical, political, cultural liberation of Algeria. But concerning the future, we have different objectives. And that is why there was a real conflict between the some people, leaders of the Algerian front, and the communists. But after independence, things became a little not less complicated, but there was another objective. That was, what will be tomorrow's Algeria? Will it be just an ordinary country like any other country with the same way of acting socially? Will it be, in a word, a capitalist country, or will it be another society? Of course, in the front, there were people who say, well, now we have independence, and we have to give our country all the same objects as other countries like France, Italy, and they would give other examples, do. And the communists said, no, we must suppress exploitation. We must suppress the fact that they are in the same country, millionaires and beggars. That's the country we want. In a word, we want a socialist country. But for the 3 years that came after the proclamation of independence, things seemed to go in the direction that the most progressive people of the front and the communists had chosen at all. So for these 3 years, things went on. Although the Communist Party was banned, but it was in practice, there was no action led against them. There was many communists who acted in a positive position with the front. So things went on like this. Then the communists reproached to themselves that they thought that the road was open for a socialist Algeria, and the model, if we can call that a model, the model was Cuba. Cuba had also started as a progressive revolution, and then it came to the fact that all the trends of the Cuban revolution went forward to the constitution of a new society. And the little party of the Cuban Communist Party acted in that way and mixed with all the Cuban organizations that followed Fidel Castro. And that what also did the Algerian Communist Party, thinking that normally the front and the communists would mix and create a new country like the way had already been opened by the Cubans. So it's difficult to answer your question. question, because the real answer is that there was some illusions in the idea of the communists that it was just the same way of going forward in Algeria as it had been in Cuba. That was their thought and error, and that's what they now, many of them now say, considering the past, that they were really out of the truth to consider that the two revolutions will have the same result.
Right. What was your relationship to Frantz Fanon? Do you agree with him that decolonization failed because of a confusion between independence and freedom and a conflation of nationalism and national liberation?
There were also conflicts with Fanon. Fanon was a doctor, psychiatrist, not far from Algiers, in a little town called Blida. And the conflicts with him were not during his stay as a doctor. It came afterwards, when he became a very important thinker on different liberation problems, and especially concerning the liberation of Algeria. The fact was not really the confusion between independence and freedom, or nationalism and national liberation. Of course, there was some confusion, but the confusion was not only between the communists and Fanon. The confusion was even inside the different parties. I remember concerning, for example, the word national and nationalism, the two words. Of course, for the communists, it was clear that they fought for a nation and for national interest. But in the same time, they didn't accept the word nationalist as a word that could open the way to a new Algeria. The difference is national. National, you fight for national interest. You mean you have the whole population fighting for a single national interest, which at that time was independence. Nationalist means something else. It means that even if you think that your country is not on the right way, but you must defend it because you're a nationalist, which is contrary to the fact that the interest of the nation is to fight for national interests, but not the nationalist thinking that is only for one's nation, and sometimes against the other nation, because, as you know, the word my country first, right or wrong, it's my country, etc. The communists did not accept that idea. And on the contrary, nationalists would stress that this was the only way to go forward. But in the same time, the real contradiction was somewhere else. It was inside the fight in Algeria. Fanon wrote and said that all people of European extract, even if their grandfather, great-grandfather had lived in Algeria, even if they were only workers and had nothing in common with settlers who run on millions and millions of francs exploiting the Algerian people, even if they were only very simple people, they were colonialists, and they had to be fought as colonialists. On the contrary, the communists stressed that these Europeans who were workers, even if they had in their minds something left by the culture in which they had been brought, they should be considered as people who were going to live in Algeria, and that their presence in Algeria was something very important for the country. It was the interest of all people in Algeria, whatever their first nationality, to consider themselves as Algerian people, even if they had a different religion from the majority. And then you couldn't consider them as enemies, but on the contrary, you had to fight to make them your allies in that fight. Fanon had another idea. And in a way, he didn't understand the necessity even for the fight of Algeria for its freedom to have all these European people not against you, but with you. And of course, it was not accepted by him, nor by some leaders of the Algerian front. So that made the great difference between us, and not the former argument about nationalists, which came as secondary.
You have mentioned Cuba previously, but let me ask another question relating to that topic. You have been a careful observer of Cuba's political evolution and are the author of Victorious Cuba, published in 1963. What is your take on Cuba's current situation? And does the so-called Cuban model still matter? And if so, why?
Well, as you said, I was in Cuba in 61. I must say that at that time, I escaped 3 or 4 months earlier from the French prison in which I was jailed. And when I came to Cuba, it was still the time of the revolution. people had in mind that they were free and that they could do whatever they wanted, and that Cuba would take the road it had chosen for its people. Of course, many things have changed since that time, and the enormous feeling of freedom and of the fact that everything was easy to do has been confronted with reality. It was not as simple as people thought when the Barbudos came out of the mountain. It was not so easy to do what you thought would be good to be done for the country. There were social, economy, and different difficulties that they didn't imagine at that time. So we know very well that the difficulties of Cuba come from it's the relation of the island with the big brother, the neighbor, with the blockade, etc. So the situation is now quite different. And some countries that evidently took Cuba as a model, for example, Algeria, they did not imagine all the difficulties that Cuba was going to have because of its very bad relation with the United States. So a part of what I have said concerning the difference between the two revolutions, between the fact that the front of liberation in Algeria was completely different from the Barbudos who had led the Cuban Revolution, a part of that there were other things that could not be kept as a model for Algeria or other countries. But one thing is certain, and that continues even nearly 40, 45 years after the Cuban Revolution, continues to give a strong spirit to most of people of the world, is the fact that in spite of the difference of strength between the two conflicting powers, a small island with 10 or 12 million inhabitants or even less, and a powerful giant, certainly the most powerful country in the world. Well, there's such a difference of strength between the two powers that you couldn't even imagine that Cuba could resist for such a long time. It resisted and it still resists. Some people say it's a dictatorship, but a dictatorship cannot stand very long if the majority of the people are not behind it. And in a way, the resistance of Cuba and of its leaders are still an inspiration for all people in the world who fight against stronger than themselves. So That is why I think that even now, with many differences, the example of Cuba is still very important for the world.
Are you still a member of the PCF, the Parti Communiste, the French Communist Party? What do you say when some, such as Edgar Morin, reproach you for your quote-unquote orthodoxy, and others claim that you were not critical enough of the Soviet Union's invasion and repression of Hungary and Czechoslovakia?
Well, I would say today that it is easy to give lessons for the past. In a way, of course, I am very sad when I consider some things that happened in the Soviet Union at the time of Stalin. But in the same time, I don't accept the idea that what should have been done is to condemn in a block, as these people you have spoken about did, the countries that tried to open a new road to humanity. That is why I don't regret my fight against Nazism, against fascism, against colonialism, and to have given at that time as ways to follow the example of these socialist countries, which is not at all a way of refusing to consider the errors, and more than the errors, certain crimes that have been committed at that time in these countries. But I don't accept the idea that because of these errors, because of the crimes committed by some people, the fight for socialism should be itself condemned. I make a comparison with what happened in France. You speak of the French Revolution, and some people stress that Robespierre was responsible for the execution of 2,000 people, not more than that, 2,000 people who were sent to the guillotine. And taking this into account, they consider that all French Revolution was a fault, and that we should take a real space between what happened during that time and now. Well, that's really trying to put a veil on the very good things that the French Revolution brought, that aristocracy which had led the country and exploited the French peasants for centuries. It was good. It was a good thing that such a regime should be suppressed. And then the fight for the rights of man, the fights against slavery, against the condition done to people in the few colonies that France had at that time, the proclamation that all men are equal. Well, in the same time, there were bad things. Maybe the history that could not prevent this. And you know that Robespierre, one of his first tasks was to ask to suppress the death penalty, but he couldn't stick to that. Not because he didn't want it, but there were other forces that fought against the French Revolution. And in a way, it's often the fate of revolution to start with great ideals, but in the same time to have to count also with what the other part, the enemies, are doing. So I don't think that the criticism against some position like the one you said can be answered in a few words. I think it's much more complicated, and when you fight to change the world, you have to take this into account.
What do you think of the state of the left and the far left in France today? What is your opinion on the endurance of the far right in that country?
Well, you see, in France now, well, as you said, we're in a time of elections, and most people are completely bewildered by what they see. Some proclaim that they are left, but in the same time, they divide themselves. and don't accept the idea that some people in the last month have accepted, for example, this Europe they want to build. Of course, speaking in the States, it is perhaps difficult for people to understand why people they call themselves progressive are against this Europe they want to be built. It's completely different what happened in the unification of the states and the constitution of the United States of America. Nothing to be compared what they want to do in France. What do they want to do? Well, in France, you have unified states for centuries, or with their culture, with their history, and with different values of forces. Some, like in France or in Italy, a very important social history. And they did not accept, they won't accept, that all the past, the positive past of their country, should be brought to nothing now. And that countries that haven't got this important cultural past should intervene in their own affairs. That's one thing. Then Europe, as what is predicted, should be a Europe of corporate interest in front of all. It's not for the benefit of the people that this Europe is constituted. It's for the benefit of the big corporations who want to have no frontiers to go on with the way they have led their affairs until now. So in some countries, like, for example, France, people were aware of this, and they voted no to the referendum. We are not against Europe. We want a Europe of different people united together, but with every nation being master in its own country and not having to obey orders dictated by foreign corporations. So if you understand that, you're really bewildered to see people who call themselves left and who have a great importance in the opinion, like, for example, I would say the Socialist Party, which called for a positive vote. And now, although there have been a negative vote against Europe, all these people in top of the state, they do as if it has no importance. So this is the first thing about the left. And even people on the ultra-left, they didn't have a different position, well, with different arguments. This is has no importance. It's not considered by workers as an affair that has some interest for them. It's affairs of the people who are in business and so on, but workers have nothing to do with it, which is nonsense. So you can understand that voting left, it means something, but it doesn't mean really what the people want to say. And now on the right, you have people who understand that Frenchmen are fed up with these politicians. They want something new. So they will use a language that until now was a language of the left. No man of the right would give a quotation of Jaurès in a speech, for example, and he would not observe that the people who fought during the resistance must be honored. So they used that language, and of course people don't know now who is left, who is right, because of the different language they use. So I think these elections are really election of confusion. And although the first round of election has not yet been sealed by a vote, we can understand that the confusion will last even after these elections. And in my opinion, only big mass movements in France will perhaps make the situation a little clearer. Okay. I'm sorry.
Let's wish. In 1958, Jérôme Lindon took a big risk in deciding to publish La Question. Do you think this kind of courage is possible in the French publishing world today?
I think courage and courageous people always appear when there is a necessity and a time for them to express themselves. It wasn't the French leaders at one time, philosophers, although they played a role, they decided that there would be a French Revolution. Neither the great American leaders decided that they would fight against the English oppression. It came a time when people were ripe to listen to these people, these courageous people. But maybe there would have been another time where these people would have preached in the desert. So I think Lindon was, of course, courageous. He was a very special editor who could do such things as publishing a book that was going to be seized. But he did it in a time when many people would come behind him and help him. So I think it's the same thing now. Tomorrow, if things change in France, if people go out in the streets or in strikes, as it has been often done in France, there will be leaders and there will be courageous people to take the risk of doing what has been done before them, in addition or in other fields.
Reflecting on your life,
yes,
you've said that you do not regret your engagement, which, despite the difficulties you encountered, has been altogether worth it. Could you shed more light on the meaning of political commitment in your life?
I think that what I've just said is a part of the answer I can give. I think that I wouldn't have had another life if the circumstances would have been the same. Of course, maybe there was some also special genes. I was a young man and did not consider that becoming a millionaire would be the happiness I looked for. And I thought that maybe there were some illusions. I'm now 86, and I thought that I would see in my lifetime what I was looking for, freedom and happiness for most people, etc. Well, it didn't come so quick as I thought, but I still think it was worthwhile to fight for it, and I still think that it's not in my time that such thing will be seen, but maybe for the next generation, or perhaps the plural, next generation. But it's worthwhile doing it.
Your wife, Gilberte, also a communist, has been an integral part of your struggle. Like other couples, such as, you know, Sartre and de Beauvoir, or later Mongobetti and Odile Tobner, your commitment to each other has been inseparable from your commitment to a better world. Do you discuss your activism with your children today? How do they view their childhood? Do they or did they share your and your wife's ideals?
Yes, well, one of the great happiness of my life is that I can answer positively to your question. And I don't know how it could be, because our children have had a difficult life as children. A father in jail, separated for years. Same thing with their own childhood. They, at the time of the OIS, you know, the army, they called it organized army against the Republican power in France. Fascist, my boy, one of his tasks was to search if there was some bombs in the stairs every evening and so on. So that wasn't a real childhood. and they were separated, two brothers. But after that, first of all, they made very good, had very good results in their studies. And, of course, they are not, as some, unfortunately, parents have had to witness, that their children, after such a difficult life, would grow away from them. But on the contrary, and of course, they have their own life, they have their own understanding of the situation, they're modern people, but they have the same orientation as we had. And they are very proud of being in a family that fought for the independence of Algeria and still fighting for a better future. So they are both professors at Sorbonne, and even in their field, they do what they can. My younger son, he's 55, so he's not so young, but he's a writer, a philosopher, and his specialty is Greek, ancient Greek culture, and you won't be astonished. His specialty is the Greek materialist philosophers. So, and the other one is a mathematician.
You were passionately involved in your work as director of Alger Républicain and have clearly relished being a journalist. Please highlight for us what this newspaper and journalism have meant for you, and maybe your work also at the French communist daily L'Humanité later on.
Well, I think that being a journalist for me and also being a militant were not two separate fields. I consider that every morning when I wrote a paper or someone else gave me a paper to read and give my opinion, this was part of the same action, the same work I was doing, that is trying at that time to fight against colonialism and liberate Algeria from the colonialist yoke. So being a journalist or even writing a book was never a different task for me. In fact, I never wrote a book without, first of all, trying to think of the utility of the book. If it was not useful, I would not write it. And so all the books I have written are a part of the fight I had chosen. That's what I can say. I don't understand journalism as a sort of ordinary work. There's a big responsibility in talking to people and even more asking them to follow this or that path, to be left or to be right, to help the Algerian people to get their independence, or on the contrary, to say everything is okay in the Algerian colonial situation. Let's fight against the people who want to change things. So it's really very responsible, because you're not only giving an opinion, you're implicating people in some action. And perhaps after that action, they can have real bad things happen to them, imprisonment and so on. So I consider writing not as only a pleasure or only a cultural involvement, although I think that it's worthwhile trying to write as best you can, trying to make things easier for people to understand. But the fundamental part of my writing is part of the action and political action.
How do you analyze the current war in Iraq? Do you think that the use of torture can be understood in similar terms as when it was applied in colonial Algeria by the French?
On the whole, I'd answer yes, because the important discussion, is not should torture be used or not be used. Of course, it's it's a moral question also. But the real question is why people brought to use torture. And the answer, it's in that type of war, liberation of a people, of a colony, or of corporation, which want to have their word to say in the use of all the riches that are in this country. Who can believe that the war in Iraq is to help this Iraqi people to find a way to democracy? Of course, when you know that in this country billions and billions of barrels of petrol, oil can come out each day, there you find the answer of the reason of the war. So you find also the answer that the people will not accept that. It's their wealth and it's their country, and they don't accept that some other country comes in and want to show what they have to do. Of course, some things they do are very difficult to accept or not acceptable, but the essential reason is the intervention of some foreign people in their affairs, in their country. So you can really say that there is a parallel to be drawn between the what happened in Algeria and what happened now in Iraq or Afghanistan. That is why torture is evidently very sensitive, very important factor, but it is not the only one, and it's not the main one. The main one is the war and how to stop the war if you want to stop torture. I would say something else also, that compared to what happened in France in the time of the War of Algeria and what happens now here and in other countries related with the War of Iraq, something stresses me. At the time of war in Algeria, the French government, the French army, did not accept the accusations of torturing people. They would say these are only inventions by the FLN propagandists or the communists. This does not exist. How can a country like our country, like France, an army whose bulk was made of people who have their fathers that have been in the resistance movement, etc., how could they torture prisoners? It's impossible. You can't. So that's what, in fact, the book I wrote, the question, fought against, to show the truth and not what they wanted people to believe in. But now there's another thing, in a way perhaps more dangerous, that they, the people who make the war, they, not only the American government, but others, they accept the idea that if there is a law, you can torture. So just make laws that give the permission to torture, and people that are ordered to torture will have a quiet mind, and that they can torture without problem of conscience. So I think this is very, very dangerous if a country accept that. But people will accept it against their enemy, against terrorists, etc., and then they will accept it against their own people in some circumstances. So I think this, the American, the Israelis and others should have that in mind.
Reading your works, one is struck by the importance you attach to friendship and solidarity, and to the fact that militancy cannot be dissociated from these values. Would it be fair to say that for you, political commitment can be conceived of, in the broadest sense, as a human adventure, une aventure humaine?
Yes, I think the relation is correct. You know, when you're fighting for an ideal or any other aspect, you find it is a fair thing to do, to say. So it creates among all people who have the same way of thinking, it creates a sense of solidarity and fraternity that you can't find anywhere. And in a way, it's part of that aventure humaine, but it's not an aventure humaine, it's not an adventure for the fake of adventurism, for the fake of doing things other people don't do. On the contrary, the things I have had to suffer, I would have really avoided it if I could have done it. But to know that other people have passed through the same sufferances, etc., for the same ideal, and that they don't regret it, but on the contrary, they are proud to have gone through and fought what they had to fight for. Well, this is part of the big aventure humaine you're talking of.
In the broadest sense.
Apart from La Question, which of the 13 books you have written or written in collaboration has the most import in your eyes, and why?
Well, you know, the title, it's the history of the war of Algeria. It's a three-volume book, and I think that until now has been perhaps the most useful, because it was the first book on the war of Algeria to be printed with a double look, I would say. It wasn't written by Frenchmen who saw the war of Algeria. Perhaps they had either other ideas than some classical historians had. A bunch of rebels against the French power. They should be defeated, and the French army and the French government fought for the defeat of these rebels. Unfortunately, they would say things turned out another way. So that was the real right-wing view of the Algerian history by some historians. Some other Frenchmen also spoke of the war in Algeria as a war with a difficult situation for the French, but anyway, it was written by French. There was another part, some Algerians wrote not books but articles from the Algerian point of view. Even if they were right, they had no interest in knowing what the French had in mind. So we tried, I said we, because I was with three other people. Gilbert, my wife, also had an important part in these books. And we wanted to have books that would look on both parts together, and also the confrontation between the ideas of Algerian people for their liberation and the situation in France. Situation in France where a great amount of people accepted the idea that the Algerians had to choose what they wanted for their country, and it wasn't a task of the French government to say what they should do. So I think these books were perhaps the most useful. Now, if you ask me the book I liked to write, I would say the last one, Mémoire Algérienne, because, of course, you should never say a man of the edition told me, that's my last book, you must always say that's my new book. But nevertheless, I try to see things in a realistic way, and I don't think I will write many books now.
Well, it's a beautiful book, it's a fascinating book, and you know, hopefully it will be translated in languages other than French. You know, to conclude this interview, I would like to ask you a last question. What do you say to young and not so young people who want to make a difference and bring about more justice in the world, in the light of your experience?
I would say, as I heard my friend David Schalk say, that some things you never dreamt of in a bad sense, like, for example, the abandon of some rights that the American people have fought for, constitutional rights, etc. This would come to actuality, to reality now. So I would like to say to young people, when I meet them, I do that, that they should never think that what their fathers or themselves have gained has been gained forever. And can come a time where all the rights that they consider as quite natural can be again put in question. So they must be vigilant in all sense of the word. And in the same time, I think that the defeats and also the pas en arrière, the fact that society sometimes makes steps backwards, this is also not forever. And young people should keep an ideal, and that ideal cannot be another thing that good, success, peace, and prosperity for all people, and not only for a small part of humanity. I think that would be what I would wish for the young generation to have in mind.
Henri Alec, I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts so generously with us. It has been both a pleasure and a great honor to be here with you and to spend this time.
Thank you. Thank you to you.